Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You are now entering a critical thinking zone. Thinking caps are required beyond this point. From deep behind enemy lines, deep in the heart of the Midwest, it's your host, Andrew Coppins. And it's time for critical thinking.
Well, it is a good Truth or Fiction Tuesday. At least I hope it will be a good Truth or Fiction Tuesday. Hope everybody's having a good day. Welcome into Critical Thinking. Andrew Coppins, Padoni alongside you for the next hour. Whether that's on Mojo 5.0 Radio, or you're listening via podcast, or rumble.com/critical thinking. Now, before we get into the heart of today's show, which is always Truth or Fiction on Tuesdays, gotta let you know. Yes, I know yesterday's show is not up on the Rumble page. Not my fault. It's stuck in the ether of Rumble's encoding software. So, well, I'm working behind the scenes to get it back up and going. But either way, you might get a double dose on the Rumble page today of the show. So if you want to see yesterday's show, you can do that. But again, you can always download the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. And if we're not there, let us know and we'll add ourselves to the podcasting platform. Of course, you can always listen on Mojo 5.0 Radio, but the podcast and the show actually drop at noon Eastern time every single Monday through Friday. So if you want to listen throughout your workday, you can do so. Or listen on your way home on Mojo 5.0 Radio. Again, that's Mojo 5.0 Radio, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, or Mojo50.com. Now, Mr. Padoni, we're going to do something up front here that we have not done in a while on the show. So, are you holding on to your chair?
Do I need to hold on to my chair?
Maybe.
Okay.
Okay.
Holding on.
That's right. We're going by the numbers. In fact, we even have to change up part of that graphic.
But yeah, we do.
It's been a little while since we've gone by the numbers, but in the midst of all of the craziness that's gone on, you know, Omicron virus and whatever outrage the media wants you to get into as of late, one bill that has not quite yet passed, Pat, but looks likely to eventually pass, Build Back Better plan, right?
Unfortunately, yeah. Yeah, with the way things are going.
Now, what if I told you that you could receive $12,000 as part of this bill?
I would ask how, and I would ask what the consequences are.
Well, both actually apply to this principle. Because, you see, in order to build back better, we must incentivize change in habits, right, Pat?
What kind of habits are we talking about here?
I'm glad you asked. It's the habit of gas-guzzling consumerism.
Oh, so this is part of Joe Biden's version of the Green New Deal is what you're saying.
It's actually in the Build Back Better bill, though. It's not in the infrastructure bill that was put.
But isn't there a lot of stuff in the Build Back Better bill that moves his climate agenda forward?
You would be correct, including this concept of the $12,000 electric vehicle. That's right.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, you see, you can receive up to $12,000 for buying an electric car as part of the Build Back Better plan. Yes, Pat, you want to know what the consequence of it is?
Well, no, I do. I actually do want to know that. But at the same time, I'm also thinking, do these cars cost $12,000 by chance?
No, you just get a tax credit of $12,000, you fool.
So wait a minute. You're telling me that I have to go and trade in my truck for an electric car.
Or truck.
And I only get $12,000 tax credited to me to do that when it's actually going to cost me probably at least another 30 grand on top of that. And you're only going to give me 12?
The details, Pat, matter.
Okay.
Because you asked about consequences, and there is a consequence. Oh, because boy. In order to receive your $12,000 full tax credit,
mm-hmm.
you get to purchase one vehicle and one vehicle only. Any guesses as to which electric vehicle you get to purchase?
I have a funny feeling it's not Tesla.
Yep. In fact, you don't get a tax credit for purchasing a Tesla at all.
Why? They sell electric cars.
I'm glad you asked, because as part of Biden's plan to reduce carbon emissions, there is a provision which would provide a $7,500 tax rebate to any consumer who purchases an electric vehicle, including both all-electric and plug-in hybrids. So, I shouldn't say that. You do get $7,500 if you purchase a Tesla.
Wait a minute. So, I get $12,000 for any other electric vehicle that's not Tesla?
No. You don't get $12,000 more. You just get a $7,500 credit. Mm-hmm. But if you purchase, wait for it, your amount increases by another $4,500, which would, let's do the math at home, right? $7,500 plus $4,500 gets you to $12,000, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Only if that car was manufactured in a unionized U.S. factory.
Oh, so this is what it's coming back down to, is the unions get some kickbacks, and because Tesla's not that, they don't get you're not getting a kickback for it.
Now, you also get another $500 for a total of $12,500 if that same vehicle contains a U.S.-made battery. Now, Pat. I told you that there was one car and one car only that would get you the full amount.
What car is that, Andrew Coppins?
Take a wild guess as to what electric vehicle qualifies for the entirety. Just take a wild guess.
Why do I have a funny feeling it's like Toyota?
No.
Or something.
It's a very general car that has a motor.
Oh, General Motors?
Mm-hmm.
GMC?
It is the Chevy Bolt. That's right. If you want your $12,500 tax credit, you must purchase a Chevy Bolt. Not Volt. Bolt with a B.
No.
Why not, Pat?
Because Tesla, first of all, makes a better car in terms of an electric car. Secondly, if I'm going to, because I actually drive a Chevy truck. If I'm going to upgrade to an all electric. I'm gonna get an electric truck because I want a truck.
Okay.
Okay. The Chevy Bolt is a teeny tiny man card thieving use of a car. Like it's.
Are you sure that's not the Toyota Prius?
Well, that too. That fits in that category as well.
Which, by the way, if seriously, Pat, I don't know about you, but Prius drivers are a-holes.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Truth or fiction, Prius drivers are a-holes.
Oh, no, that's absolutely true.
Now, what is wrong besides it being a man card soul-sucking device?
They're not reliable, are they?
No, because the Chevy Bolt has recently halted production. Wait for this, Pat. Because those made in the USA batteries catch on fire. In fact, there is a sign outside of our parking garage here in our building that says Chevy Bolt's not allowed in the garage.
Oh.
Why, pray tell? Because they catch on fire.
So what you're really saying is that no one in their right mind would ever buy a Chevy Bolt.
Now, as this article points out, as a matter of fact, out of more than 50 EVs currently on the market, the only vehicles which currently qualify for the extra money are the two different variations of the Bolt. That's it. But if you wanted that bonus $4,500, right, beyond the $7,500 in electric vehicle credits, you are only going to have, wait for it, your choice of Ford, GM, or Stellantis, which is formerly Fiat and Chrysler. That's it. So no Kia, no Hyundai, no Volkswagen, no
Mercedes.
No.
Even though Mercedes BMW, actually does make an electric car.
Right. BMW has a bunch of electrics out there.
Mm.
No Tesla.
No Toyota.
No, I think it's Rivinia or whatever. It's the full-on truck. Produced entirely, by the way, here in the state of Illinois. Not even that vehicle qualifies for the full amount.
So, I have a question here. Are there going to be, and I would think that there would be, but I want to see what your thoughts are. Are there going to be unintended consequences in terms of economic consequences and actually competition driving consequences for these companies?
Yeah. What about it?
I'm just saying, like to me, this seems like the government getting in the way of real competition and real economic, a real economic driving force. Because then now what is the incentive for any of these other companies that we can't buy from to get these so-called tax credits? What's the incentive for them to ever really truly go full on electric?
The incentive is the pressure of government, right? The incentive is the pressure of, well, if I want to, if I want to be able to dogpile on top of all these credits, right? Because now I can still sell the car or the truck for $40,000-$50,000, right? Still sell it. I'm not the one that's paying that tax credit. See the problem there?
Yeah, I see the problem. I'm just wondering, like what are
it's
the
not really a problem depending on what side of the equation you're on, right? Like if you're on the side of Ford and GM and Stellantis, or Stellantis, excuse me, I still, that's a, by the way, Pat, sidebar, that is the worst bleeping name for a car company I've ever heard.
I've actually never heard of it until this moment.
Yeah, it's the new name of the combined Fiat Chrysler. Like, what the hell is it?
With a better name?
Yeah. Yeah. Give me a break. Now, if you're on the side of that company, or even, let's say, a Tesla or whatever, right? Because Tesla has used tax credits and all sorts of government money to really bolster their production and their value proposition, right? They've used it to their advantage in the past. But to these companies, I can charge $40,000 and I get the full $40,000 for the vehicle. You, the consumer, get $12,500 off of the price of that vehicle, potentially, right? Or $12,000. I, as a company, lose nothing in that.
Yeah, but we as a taxpayer do, because that $12,000 is going to come out of our taxes, right?
Right, right. So the incentive is there for these companies to do what?
Nothing.
Mm-mm. The incentive is there for them to produce more and more of these vehicles because they're getting the full price. The consumer's not paying the full price in the end. You're getting a $12,000 tax credit at the end of the year.
I don't know. I just feel like there's going to be some unintended consequences here somewhere.
Right.
It has to be.
I shouldn't say unintended, but the consequence of trying to do this is what? Is union jobs. Is to make and force these companies to unionize. That's what the consequence of this is, Pat. And that's why I wanted to use this as by the numbers, right? We're talking $12,500 of tax credits. And if you want your, if your Toyota, if your Kia, if your Hyundai, if your BMW, Mercedes, right? You're now $4,500 less attractive to the consumer in your price of an EV. So how do you compete? How do you compete if all things are equal, right? Most things are equal when it comes to pricing of electric vehicles today. They're somewhere between $30,000 to $50,000 depending on the package, depending on is it an SUV, a car, whatever, right? $30,000 to $50,000 is a good range, right?
Sure.
The average is probably around $35,000 to $40,000, right? Let's say you're going for that mid-level car, right? You're going to compete with the Tesla, the Model S, right? It's about $35,000 to $40,000 at the baseline for a Model S. Okay. How do you compete with that? I charge the same price, but you get $12,000. If you get a Tesla, you only get $7,500 back. That Tesla is now $4,500 more expensive to the consumer at the end of the day. Tesla either has the option of unionizing their workforce to incentivize this full credit, right? Or discounting their price by $4,500. Or the third alternative is remarketing why they're worth an extra $4,500 in the consumer's mind.
Well, I mean, I'm already thinking like in terms of a Tesla compared to a Chevy Bolt, I would rather spend an extra $4,500.
Right, because of the value prop. But I'm talking apples to apples, right? Let's say you're comparing a Tesla to the high-end offering from Ford, right? Let's say the Ford Mustang EV, right? The new like hybrid, it's not even an actual car. It's an SUV, right? Okay. Compare those two vehicles. If a difference of $4,500, you as Tesla must do again one of three things, right? You either must lower your price by $4,500 to attract the same consumer, or you must be able to remarket your vehicle and show your value proposition versus the competition. And that is consumer education. Or alternatively, and thirdly, you unionize your workforce and you qualify for that $4,500. Let me ask you this, Pat. Is unionizing your workforce, if you're Tesla or any other startup, electric vehicle company, if you're any of them, can you compete with that $4,500 per unit sold? And would it be worth it to you to unionize for that $4,500 extra? Because, yes, technically you are, as the company, are not receiving that $4,500, right?
Right.
But in the mind of the consumer, you're costing them $4,500.
Right.
Do you see what the government is attempting to do here and why this is part of by the numbers? Because you really have to start crunching numbers to understand, you know, because here's the other thing, right? Are you spending $4,500 in consumer education and marketing per unit sold? Extra. Are you now going to have to spend that $4,500 one way or the other?
Yeah, they've certainly got a decision to make. I mean, if I were to do this from a philosophical standpoint, I probably wouldn't do it. And that's just because, like, you know, I honestly believe, like, hey, the quality of my product is going to speak for itself, right? If I'm Tesla, that's what I would be relying on, and I would be marketing the hell out of that. On the other hand, you're right. You have to sit down and crunch the numbers. And I don't know what those numbers are going to look like for Tesla. It could be, hey, you know what? It's going to be worth it for us in the long run to unionize and take advantage of this so that way we're not losing customers and we're still meeting our bottom line at the end of the day. You know, it could come down to something as simple as that. It's crap that the government's putting them in this position. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, as a company, you know, you have a bottom line, right?
Yeah. I don't know what the answer is to this, but what I do know is that this is the boot of government attempting to make a change rather than the consumer and the product producer continuing to evolve to make that change, right?
Which I could make the argument that that's been naturally happening for
right.
years now.
Right. The issue with all of this for me, Pat, from a broader perspective, away from the numbers, away from, well, this is kind of a numbers thing. How many electric vehicle charging stations do we have in this country? The answer is not nearly enough.
No, yeah, not enough.
Not even close. Secondly, have those charging stations and the powers within the vehicle changed enough for us to be able to hop off the highway, grab a snack, and my vehicle is charged up? No.
No.
For the vast majority 30, of these vehicles, minutes. if you're down to a, let's say, quarter power, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to take you an hour and a half to charge these vehicles, unless you have a Tesla, right? And the Tesla fast charging stations. How many of those exist? Not enough. Now, here in Chicago, we're lucky because a lot of the grocery stores in this area, especially the chain that we call Mariano's, a lot of them have the Tesla fast charging stations there. So that's great. You can go get your groceries, and by the time you come back out, your Tesla is fully charged. But we're asking people to give up vehicles that go, you know, from Chicago to Green Bay, let's say, right? My hometown. I can go there and have about a quarter of a tank of gas left. I can't do that with most electric vehicles. I would need to stop somewhere and charge it up. It doesn't have the range to do that yet. Until we have the physical range or the ability to just quickly hop off the highway, charge the vehicle up and hop back on, we don't have the incentive for the consumer to make that switch.
I would argue you actually need both.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. And we're getting there. We're getting there. The technology is getting there. But it's not quite there yet.
Yeah.
It's going to be another, I would say, about 5 years before the technology in the car or the truck is there. Now, I will say this. The future of until that can happen as fast as you can, you know, put that nozzle into the gas can and fill it up, until that happens, consumers will not make that switch. It's just the reality. Okay, so I don't know about you, Pat, but I've had enough of the boot of government down on my throat. I don't know about you.
What, you don't like the boot of government on your throat?
No, I don't think anybody. Well, actually, I take that back. Leftists enjoy it, but only on you. Only on you. See, because they're above you.
So you don't enjoy that?
Weirdly, no, Pat. But let's get away from that, because I think it's time for us to play a little game that we like to call the bee or not the bee. All right. Are you ready for today's headline?
I'm about as ready as the Seattle Seahawks were to lose to the Washington football team last night, aka the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, the Redskins kicked the living tar out of them.
Yeah.
From what I saw. Although Tyler Heinicke didn't really have that great of a game.
No, he did not.
But that's neither here nor there. I only caught about midway through the third quarter because we had a Christmas tree lighting to go to here in Chicago. And it was fantastic. In, well, some ways. In other ways, disheartening. Should we talk about that before we get into... you know what? I'm going to save that for truth or fiction.
Okay.
We'll get into that. But today's headline for the bee or not the bee is Vox suggests renaming invasive species because it's offensive to bugs and plants. What? Vox suggests renaming invasive species because it's offensive to bugs and plants.
Vox. Okay. I thought you said fox. And I'm like, okay.
Vox. V-O-X.
Okay. Uh-huh.
All right. So while you are thinking about that, may I suggest humbly, if you'd like to support Mojo50 Radio, you can do so by going to mojo50.com/donate. And I believe you still have time to get this by Christmas. You go to mojo50.com/donate, donate $25, and you get the official Mojo50 Radio Christmas tree ornament to hang on your tree to show that you enjoy free speech. It's just that simple. Mojo50.com/donate. $25 donation gets you a one-of-a-kind, unique, only for this year, Mojo50 Radio Christmas tree ornament. Just saying. Not saying, I'm just saying. All right. That out of the way, Pat. Do you need the headline one more time?
Well, considering we clarified that it was a Vox, I'm going to go with not the B.
Mm. Why?
Because this is exactly something Vox would say.
Good thinking, because you are correct. Vox suggests renaming invasive species because it's offensive to bugs and plants. This is literally a tweet. Invasive species is a nativist concept so ingrained in American consciousness that it's taken on a life of its own. At M. Bolotinkova reports. That's right. Invasive species aren't all bad and invasive. They're just misunderstood. And it's probably all due to global warming anyway. From the article, for example, invasives can be considered a threat not only a threat not only by killing or outcompeting native species, but also by mating with them. To protect the genetic integrity of species, conservationists often go to extraordinary lengths to prevent animals from hybridizing. Environmental writer Emma Maris points out in her book, Wild Souls, Freedom and Flourishing in the Non-Human World, consider the effort in North Carolina to prevent coyotes from breeding with endangered red wolves, which bears uncomfortable parallels to Western preoccupations with racial purity that only recently went out of fashion. According to these wokesters, there are now invading the sciences, stopping coyotes, breeding with red wolves is the same thing as saying that interracial marriage is bad. That's what they're equating this to. If that isn't just a horribly racist grasping at straws, I don't know what is. I personally know a very well-respected horticulturist, so I asked him what he thought of this article. Here's what he said. Invasive species management is an incredibly complicated issue that should not be confused with race issues. This is simply another example of our woke culture making everything about us. Humans are all of the same species anyway, unlike all the other examples given. That's exactly right. There is no reason to make the scientific study of ecology about race or some other nonsense. This doesn't have anything at all to do with racism, white supremacy, or nationalism. But the woke worldview today totally skews everything to make it about race and sex and other ridiculous stuff. It is a mind virus. To paraphrase a certain former president, everything woke turns to crap.
I'm assuming you've seen the movie Billy Madison.
At least once a quarter since it came out.
Okay. So, you know the scene where they're doing the trivia?
The debate?
The debate. Mm-hmm. And he's having to explain business ethics and economics and all that sort of stuff?
At no point in your incoherent rambling.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm going with this. That's exactly what this is.
People, when I say that, they wonder what I'm talking about.
What in the absolute hell? Folks, we have talked about this being pure evil, what we are seeing in America today. And what do I mean by pure evil? I am talking about the work of the devil. Okay? This is demonic. Now we're supposed to allow not just, let's say, breeding of one version of a red wolf with another, right? We're supposed to allow that. That's, I get that, right? But now, yeah, this actually reminds me of an early episode of South Park, Pat.
Oh, boy.
The pig monkey episode?
I mean, I never really watched South Park growing up, but
where they literally, where the science teacher attempts to crossbreed a monkey with a pig. 30 years ago, South Park handled this. What in the absolute?
Has it been that long ago?
I'm about to find out exactly. Oh, I'm sorry. It was also the four-assed monkey.
But South Park's been on the air for over 30 years? Holy crap.
1997 was this episode.
Okay, so not quite, but still.
And there was also a man-bear-pig episode. And an elephant making love to a pig.
So they've handled this at least three different times.
By the way. Which, by the way, is the fifth episode of the very first season of South Park. I was getting my things mixed up. But an elephant and a pig together.
So it
was also a 4-ass monkey, and also man bear pig.
This was 1997.
Mm-hmm.
So this is basically 25 years ago.
Yeah. That's the 4-ass monkey episode. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. An elephant making love to a pig aired September 10th, 1997. Same episode as a 4-ass monkey. This was all about the doctor. I think it was what the heck was it? Alphonse Mephisto. Yeah. So we're supposed to allow that to happen, Pat. That's normal and natural.
But Andrew Coppins, the science has changed. It's evolved since 1997.
Okay, sure.
Someone
also, which reminds me, go get Matt Walsh's new book. You didn't hear about that?
Uh-uh.
Oh, man. So it's called Johnny the Walrus. Johnny the Walrus.
Okay.
Okay.
Now I'm curious.
Johnny is a little boy with a big imagination. One day he pretends to be a big scary dinosaur. The next day he's a knight in shining armor or a playful puppy. But when the internet people find out Johnny likes to make believe, he is forced to make a decision between the little boy he is and the things he pretends to be. And he's not allowed to change his mind. That's right. Johnny the Walrus. This is a humor book on the take of transgenderism in prepubescent individuals. Johnny the Walrus, a tale of identity and imagination. We're there, Pat. We're there. Because we're supposed to allow a coyote, and a red wolf. These are not like, this would be like us breeding with an actual chimpanzee. And that being perfectly, no! It's not normal, it's not natural, and we should stop it. But hey, you know, it's all about evolution, baby. That's not evolution. That is not evolution.
I just... How? How is this... How? Someone has way too much time on their hands to write an article like this. Let alone a
first
book.
Freaking world.
Mm-hmm.
No justice, no peace. Let the coyote and red fox mate. I don't know. And what would you call it?
Today's title?
A coyote fox?
I mean, that works too, but I you know, let the red wolf and the coyote mate.
What do you get when you cross a coyote and a red wolf? That's not a joke.
I don't know, a red coyote?
In the absolute actual hell is going on.
I don't know. And I stopped asking that question a while ago.
Speaking of what in the absolute hell is going on, Pat, I'm going to bring you this. Truth or fiction, Joe Biden knows what variant we're on. And I'm going to play a video for you.
I'm going to go fix
today. I want to take a few moments to talk about the new COVID variant, first identified last week in Southern Africa. It's called the Omicron. It is to their credit, the scientific community in South Africa quickly notified the world of the emergence of this new variant. This kind of transparency is to be encouraged and applauded because it increases our ability to respond quickly to any new threats. And that's exactly what we did. The very day the World Health Organization identified the new variant, I took immediate steps to restrict travel from countries in Southern Africa. But while we have that travel restrictions can slow the speed of Omicron, it cannot prevent it.
So truth or fiction, does he actually know what variant we're on?
Fiction, because
wait, what?
He just learned this myself.
Said it like 10 times in 40 seconds.
I know. I learned this myself. It's not Omicron. Because I called it Omicron, I think, on my show over the weekend. So, and I learned quickly, it's not Omicron. There's no such word as Omicron. There's Omicron, but there's no Omicron. So no, it's totally fiction. He has no clue what this is. None. Zero. Zilch. Nada.
It's Omicron. And yes, folks, if you go back to yesterday's episode, I screamed Omicron, right? If you didn't catch the joke then, you weren't paying attention. It's Omicron. That is the actual way to pronounce it. Omicron. 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 It's not Omicron. There's no extra N. Brought to you by the person who believes that we should all take a booster. And oh, by the way, Pat, did you see that news yesterday? In response to this, we're supposed to all get our booster shots.
Yeah,
as if that is going to work at all. Pat, I'm dead serious on this. Are these the dumbest people on the planet? Truth or fiction?
Yeah, you know what the definition of insanity is, right?
Yeah, I'm well aware of it.
Yeah, they're not, but
it's listening to the CDC.
It's trying the same damn thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome.
No, it's just listening to the CDC.
Well, that too, yeah.
Seriously, folks. What is the point of the vaccination, right? It is to allegedly make you less sick so that you don't go to the hospital and you don't die. Even though, hey, Ben Shapiro, are you listening? Even though the vast majority of cases of Delta have now, especially amongst the people that are dying, have come from the people who are vaccinated. Because I don't know if you've listened to Ben Shapiro lately, Pat. He is thoroughly convinced that the vaccine is such a great, great thing because it allows you to increase your chances of not going to the hospital and dying. And we've talked about this in the past, right? Your individual chances are up 87%, right? You have an 87% chance of not going to the hospital or dying, except for the fact that 77% in certain areas of the country that died of with COVID-19 were people that were vaccinated as of 2 months ago. Oops. Those two things, while individually you might be able to say that you have a greater chance of protection, when you broaden it out, it suggests that no, our population, which is what matters, our population does not have a greater chance of surviving. Otherwise, your 87% chance would also tell us, on a broader sense, that you are protecting the broader society from dying at high rates. In order for that 87% personal protection rate to have been true, Pat, from a statistical analysis standpoint, what would also have to be true? That we're not seeing people do what? When we look at the stats of the people who are dying, the people who are going to the hospital. What would also have to be true?
In terms of the vaccinated?
So, in terms of stats, if we're supposed to believe that you have an 87% efficacy in terms of your personal self, right?
Right.
Not getting violently sick in which you have to go to the hospital or you die. If that personal protection is there, right? What would also have to then be true for that statement to hold true? From the broader perspective of the numbers that we see, these two things have to be congruent. And those two things are that, yes, if you have 87% protection, we also see a what? Decrease in the number of people dying. And right. More importantly, the percentage of the people that are dying are not the vaccinated.
Right.
That personal protection cannot hold if let's say we have 1,000 people that are dying, right?
Mm.
Your personal protection cannot then tell us that 77% of that 1,000% are vaccinated that are dying. That's an impossibility for the first personal protection statement to be true. Doesn't work that way. Now, it could be true that we see a decrease in the overall death numbers, right? But that's not what we were seeing with the Delta variant. We were seeing an increase in the number of people dying, an increase in the percentage of the population getting sick. When you take the look at the snapshot of August or September of 2021 versus August and September of 2020, there were more, not less. But we also shouldn't have been scared by this. Why? Because the reality of the virus for the vast majority of people getting it, right? The numbers of people getting it were way, way higher than they were in 2020. So the percentage of people who got it versus the percentage of people dying was different. But if you want to listen to people like Ben Shapiro on this topic, go ahead. He doesn't know any of the stats. None. He couldn't tell you anything specific. He just talks in general platitudes, and it drives me freaking crazy. Now, buttress this, Pat, with your big sister.
I have a big sister.
Her name is Jen Psaki.
I have a big sister named Jen Psaki.
You're Jen Psaki's little brother, right? You said that yesterday. You said that yesterday.
Okay, I may or may not have lied a little to get you to stop talking about a certain game that happened over the weekend.
Well, your big sister said this.
What? Before Joe Biden was president, he said that COVID travel restrictions on foreign countries were hysterical xenophobia and fear mongering. So what changed?
Well, I would say first, to put it in full context, Peter, what the president was critical of was the way that the former president put out, I believe, a xenophobic tweet and how he called what he called the coronavirus and who he directed it at. The president has not been critical of travel restrictions. We have put those in place ourselves. We put them in place ourselves in the spring. But no, he does not believe. He believes we should follow the advice of health and medical experts. That's exactly what he did and putting in place these restrictions over the weekend.
Shut up, Peter. Let me tell you how it is, Peter.
So, truth or fiction? Joe Biden called his travel restrictions xenophobic.
His, you mean as in by Donald Trump's travel restrictions
correct.
Xenophobic?
Truth
oh, no, that's 100% true. 100% true. I wish I could go back and find the tweet, but I remember actually seeing that tweet, and and in fact, I don't think he just called it xenophobic. I think he called it other things too.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because I'm not sure that this is truth or fiction.
Oh, do tell. I'm curious to what you're...
So, on February 1st, Joe Biden tweeted the day after Trump announced the travel restrictions. Biden tweeted, "We are in the midst of a crisis with the coronavirus. We need to lead the way with science, not Donald Trump's record of hysteria, xenophobia, and fear-mongering. He's the worst possible person to lead our country through a global health emergency." But Biden didn't explicitly, according to PolitiFact, tie xenophobia to the travel restriction. What prompted him to say this?
Right. So I guess you could have an honest debate on this either way, but still.
But here's the kicker as to maybe this actually is truth, not fiction. Because in March of that same year, about a month and a half, if you will, use the word xenophobic. In the first one, Biden was criticizing Trump for labeling coronavirus a foreign virus. In the second, it's not clear whether Biden's use of the word was in direct reference to the travel restriction. Because earlier in the day, the Trump campaign tweeted that Democrats and news outlets were accusing President Trump of racism and xenophobia for his use of the phrase the China virus. On March 18th, Trump tweeted, "I always treated the China virus very seriously and have done a very good job from the beginning, including my very early decision to close the borders from China against the wishes of almost all. Many lives were saved. The fake news narrative, a new narrative, is disgraceful and false." Biden replied via Twitter, "Stop the xenophobic fear-mongering. Be honest. Take responsibility. Do your job." I'm pretty sure this was in response to him using the term China virus.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like the use of that term. Technically, it would be the Wuhan virus, right?
Right.
If we're going by the nomenclature that we've always used. For instance, Pat, why is the state of Connecticut, or more importantly, Lyme, Connecticut, not suing the ever-loving crap out of the world right now?
Isn't that where Lyme disease kind of originated?
Bingo! That's where Lyme's disease comes from. It was first found in Lyme. So I have a very large problem with this assertion that he's not calling these travel restrictions xenophobic. The timing of these things, they're trying to tie it all together. The travel restrictions, the use of the word China virus, they were trying at the time to tie it all together in this nice little package of xenophobia, right? He's a xenophobe, however you want to pronounce it.
Hmm.
You can't on one hand make that claim and claim that mantle and then decide to do this travel restriction. And furthermore, what good would this travel restriction do if the virus is already here and we know it to already be here? Now, we haven't seen an official designation of it, but we know. It drives me bonkers. But on that note, Pat, your final thoughts.
Don't get lost. Remember who you are. No means no. And let's go, Brandon.
Please be smart, be safe, be kind, and as always, Matthew 5:47.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.